the top of the bureau covered in loose change. She turned away. Some part of her had been absolutely certain that when they walked in, they'd find the place torn to pieces and Luke tied up, injured, or worse. Now she didn't know what to think. Numbly, she crossed the hall to the little guest bedroom where she'd so often stayed when her mother was out of town on business. They'd stay up late, watching old horror movies on the flickering black-and-white TV. She even kept a backpack full of extra things here so she didn't have to lug her stuff back and forth from home. Kneeling down, she tugged it out from under the bed by its olive-green strap. It was covered with buttons, most of which Simon had given her. Gamers do it better. Otaku wench, still not king. Inside were some folded clothes, a few spare pairs of underwear, a hairbrush, even shampoo. Thank God, she thought, and kicked the bedroom door closed. Quickly she changed, stripping off Isabel's too big and now grass-stained and sweaty clothes, and pulling on a pair of her own sandblasted cords, soft as worn paper, and a blue tank top with the design of Chinese characters across the front. She tossed Isabel's clothes into her backpack, yanked the cord shut, and left the bedroom, the pack bouncing familiarly between her shoulder blades. It was nice to have something of her own again. She found Jace in Luke's book-lined office examining a green duffel bag that lay unzipped across the desk. It was, as Simon had said, full of weapons. Sheathed knives, a coiled whip, and something that looked like a razor-edged metal disc. It's a chakram, said Jace, looking up as Clary came into the room. A Sikh weapon. You whirl it around your index finger before releasing it. They're rare and hard to use. Strange that Luke would have one. They used to be Hodge's weapon of choice back in the day, or so he tells me. Luke collects stuff. Art objects, you know, Clary said, indicating the shelf behind the desk which was lined with bronze Indian and Russian idols. Her favorite was a statuette of the Indian goddess of destruction, Kali, brandishing a sword and a severed head as she danced with her head thrown back and her eyes slitted closed. To the side of the desk was an antique Chinese screen carved out of glowing rosewood. Pretty things. Jace moved the chakram aside gingerly. A handful of clothes spilled out of the untied end of Luke's duffel bag as if they had been an afterthought. I think this is yours, by the way. He drew out a rectangular object hidden among the clothes. A wooden framed photograph with a long vertical crack along the glass. The crack threw a network of spidery lines across the smiling faces of Clary, Luke, and her mother. That is mine, Clary said, taking it out of his hand. It's cracked, Jace observed. I know. I did that. I smashed it when I threw it at the Ravener demon. She looked at him, seeing the dawning realization on his face. That means Luke's been back to the apartment since the attack, maybe even today. He must have been the last person to come through the portal, said Jace. That's why it took us here. You weren't thinking of anything, so it sent us to the last place it had been. Nice of Dorothea to tell us he was there, said Clary. He probably paid her off to be quiet. Either that or she trusts him more than she trusts us, which means he might not be— Guys! It was Simon, dashing into the office in a panic. Someone's coming! Clary dropped the photo. Is it Luke? Simon peered back down the hall, then nodded. It is, but he's not by himself. There are two men with him. Men? Jace crossed the room in a few strides, peered through the door, and spat a curse under his breath. Warlocks. Clary stared. Warlocks, but shaking his head, Jace backed away from the door. Is there some other way out of here? A back door? Clary shook her head. The sound of footsteps in the hallway was audible now, striking pangs of fear into her chest. Jace looked around desperately. His eyes came to rest on the rosewood screen. Get behind that, he said, pointing. Now. Clary dropped the fractured photo on the desk and slipped behind the screen, pulling Simon after her. Jace was right behind them, his stele in his hand. He had barely concealed himself when Clary heard the door swing wide open, the sound of people walking into Luke's office, then voices. Three men speaking. She looked nervously at Simon, who was very pale, and then at Jace, who had raised the stele in his hand and was moving the tip lightly, in a sort of square shape, across the back of the screen. As Clary stared, the square went clear, like a pane of glass. She heard Simon suck in his breath, a tiny sound, barely audible, and Jace shook his head at both of them, mouthing words. "They can't see us through it, but we can see them." Biting her lip, Clary moved to the edge of the square and peered through it, conscious of Simon breathing down her neck. She could see the room beyond perfectly. The bookshelves, the desk with the duffel bag thrown across it, and Luke, ragged-looking and slightly stooped, his glasses pushed up to the top of his head, standing near the door. It was frightening, even though she knew he couldn't see her, that the window Jace had made was like the glass in a police station interrogation room, strictly one way. Luke turned, looking back through the doorway. "Yes, feel free to look around," he said, his tone heavily weighted with sarcasm. "Nice of you to show such an interest." A low chuckle sounded from the corner of the office. With an impatient flick of the wrist, Jace tapped the frame of his window, and it opened out wider, showing more of the room. There were two men there with Luke, both in long reddish robes, their hoods pushed back. One was thin, with an elegant gray mustache and pointed beard. When he smiled, he showed blindingly white teeth. The other was burly, thick-set as a wrestler, with close-cropped reddish hair. His skin was dark purple and looked shiny over the cheekbones as if it had been stretched too tight. "Those are warlocks," Clary whispered softly. Jace didn't answer. He had gone rigid all over, stiff as a bar of iron. "He's afraid I'll make a run for it, try to get to Luke," Clary thought. She wished she could reassure him that she wouldn't. There was something about those two men in their thick cloaks, the color of arterial blood, that was terrifying.
"Consider this a friendly follow-up, Greymark," said the man with the gray mustache.
His smile showed teeth so sharp they looked as if they'd been filed to cannibal points.
"There's nothing friendly about you, Pangborn."
Luke sat down on the edge of his desk, angling his body so it blocked the men's view of his duffel bag and its contents. Now that he was closer, Clary could see that his face and hands were badly bruised, his fingers scraped and bloody. A long cut along his neck disappeared down into his collar. What on earth happened to him?
"Blackwell, don't touch that. It's valuable," Luke said sternly.
The big red-headed man who had picked up the statue of Kali from the top of the bookcase ran his beefy fingers over it consideringly.
"Nice," he said.
"Ah,"
said Pangborn, taking the statue from his companion. "She who was created to battle a demon who could not be killed by any god or man. Oh, Kali, my mother full of bliss, enchantress of the almighty Shiva, in thy delirious joy thou dancest, clapping thy hands together. Thou art the mover of all that moves, and we are but thy helpless toys."
"Very nice," said Luke. "I didn't know you were a student of the Indian myths."
"All the myths are true," said Pangborn, and Clary felt a small shiver go up her spine. "Or have you forgotten even that?"
"I forget nothing," said Luke.
Though he looked relaxed, Clary could see tension in the lines of his shoulders and mouth.
"I suppose Valentine sent you?"
"He did," said Pangborn. "He thought you might have changed your mind."
"There's nothing to change my mind about. I already told you I don't know anything. Nice cloaks, by the way."
"Thanks," said Blackwell with a sly grin. "Skin them off a couple of dead warlocks."
"Those are official Accord robes, aren't they?" Luke asked. "Are they from the Uprising?"
Pangborn chuckled softly. "Spoils of battle."
"Aren't you afraid someone might mistake you for the real thing?"
"Not," said Blackwell, "once they got up close."
Pangborn fondled the edge of his robe.
"Do you remember the Uprising, Lucian?" he said softly. "That was a great and terrible day. Do you remember how we trained together for the battle?"
Luke's face twisted.
"The past is the past. I don't know what to tell you, gentlemen. I can't help you now. I don't know anything."
"Anything is such a general word, so unspecific,"
said Pangborn, sounding melancholy.
"Surely someone who owns so many books must know something."
If you want to know where to find a jog-toed swallow in springtime, I could direct you to the correct reference title. But if you want to know where the mortal cup has disappeared to, disappeared might not be quite the correct word, purred Pangborn. Hidden, more like. Hidden by Jocelyn. That may be, said Luke. So hasn't she told you where it is yet? She has not yet regained consciousness, said Pangborn, carving the air with a long-fingered hand. Valentine is disappointed. He was looking forward to their reunion. I'm sure she didn't reciprocate the sentiment, muttered Luke. Pangborn cackled. Jealous, Greymark? Perhaps you no longer feel about her the way you used to. A trembling had started in Clary's fingers, so pronounced that she knitted her hands together tightly to try to stop them from shaking. Jocelyn, can they be talking about my mother? I never felt any way about her particularly, said Luke. Two shadow hunters, exiled from their own kind, you can see why we might have banded together. But I'm not going to try to interfere with Valentine's plans for her if that's what he's worried about. I wouldn't say he was worried, said Pangborn. More curious. We all wondered if you were still alive, still recognizably human. Luke arched his eyebrows. And? You seem well enough, said Pangborn grudgingly. He set the collie statue down on the shelf. There was a child, wasn't there? A girl? Luke looked taken aback. What? Don't play dumb, said Blackwell in his snarl of a voice. We know the bitch had a daughter. They found photos of her in the apartment. A bedroom. I thought you were asking about children of mine, Luke interrupted smoothly. Yes, Jocelyn had a daughter. Clarissa, I assume she's run off. Did Valentine send you to find her? Not us, said Pangborn. But he is looking. We could search this place, added Blackwell. I wouldn't advise it, said Luke and slid off the desk. There was a certain cold menace to his look as he stared down at the two men, though his expression hadn't changed. What makes you think she's still alive? I thought Valentine sent raveners to scour the place. Enough ravener poison and most people will crumble away to ashes, leave no trace behind. There was a dead ravener, said Pangborn. It made Valentine suspicious. Everything makes Valentine suspicious, said Luke. Maybe Jocelyn killed it. She was certainly capable. Blackwell grunted. Maybe. Luke shrugged. Look, I've got no idea where the girl is, but for what it's worth, I'd guess she's dead. She'd have turned up by now otherwise. Anyway, she's not much of a danger. She's 15 years old. She's never heard of Valentine, and she doesn't believe in demons. Pangborn chuckled. A fortunate child. Not anymore, said Luke. Blackwell raised his eyebrows. You sound angry, Lucian.
I'm not angry, I'm exasperated. I'm not planning on interfering with Valentine's plans. Do you understand that? I'm not a fool.
Really, said Blackwell. It's nice to see that you've developed a healthy respect for your own skin over the years, Lucian. You weren't always so pragmatic. You do know, said Pangborn, his tone conversational, that we'd trade her, Jocelyn, for the cup, safely delivered right to your door. That's a promise from Valentine himself.
I know, said Luke. I'm not interested. I don't know where your precious cup is, and I don't want to get involved in your politics. I hate Valentine. He added, but I respect him. I know he'll mow down everyone in his path. I intend to be out of his way when it happens. He's a monster. A killing machine.
Look who's talking, snarled Blackwell.
I take it these are your preparations for removing yourself from Valentine's path, said Pangborn, pointing a long finger at the half-concealed duffel bag on the desk.
Getting out of town, Lucian?
Luke nodded slowly. Going to the country. I plan to lay low for a while.
We could stop you, said Blackwell. Make you stay.
Luke smiled. It transformed his face. Suddenly, he was no longer the kind, scholarly man who'd pushed Clary on the swings at the park and taught her how to ride a tricycle. Suddenly, there was something feral behind his eyes, something vicious and cold.
You could try,
Pangborn glanced at Blackwell, who shook his head once, slowly. Pangborn turned back to Luke.
You'll notify us if you experience any sudden memory resurgence?
Luke was still smiling.
You'll be first on my list to call.
Pangborn nodded shortly.
I suppose we'll take our leave.
The angel guard you, Lucian.
The angel does not guard those like me, said Luke.
He picked the duffel bag up off the desk and nodded the top.
On your way, gentlemen.
Lifting their hoods to cover their faces again, the two men left the room, followed a moment later by Luke. He paused a moment at the door, glancing around as if he wondered if he'd forgotten something. Then he shut it carefully behind him. Clary stayed where she was, frozen, hearing the front door swing shut and the distant jingle of chain and keys as Luke refastened the padlock. She kept seeing the look on Luke's face over and over as he said he wasn't interested in what happened to her mother. She felt a hand on her shoulder.
Clary?
It was Simon, his voice hesitant, almost gentle.
Are you okay?
She shook her head mutely. She felt far from okay. In fact, she felt like she'd never be okay again. Of course she isn't. It was Jace, his voice sharp and cold as ice shards. He took hold of the screen and moved it aside sharply. At least now we know who would send a demon after your mother. Those men think she has the mortal cup. Clary felt her lips thin into a straight line.
That's totally ridiculous and impossible.
Maybe, said Jace, leaning against Luke's desk. He fixed her with eyes as opaque as smoked glass.
Have you ever seen those men before?
No, she shook her head, never. Lucian seemed to know them, to be friendly with them.
I wouldn't say friendly, said Simon. I'd say they were suppressing their hostility.
They didn't kill him outright, said Jace. They think he knows more than he's telling.
Maybe, said Clary. Or maybe they're just reluctant to kill another shadow hunter.
Jace laughed, a harsh, almost vicious noise that raised the hairs up on Clary's arms.
I doubt that.
She looked at him hard.
What makes you so sure? Do you know them?
The laughter had gone from his voice entirely when he replied.
Do I know them? He echoed.
You might say that. Those are the men who murdered my father.
Nine. The Circle and the Brotherhood.
Clary stepped forward to touch Jace's arm, say something, anything.
What did you say to someone who'd just seen his father's killers?
Her hesitation turned out not to matter. Jace shrugged her touch off as if it stung.
We should go, he said, stalking out of the office and into the living room.
Clary and Simon hurried after him.
We don't know when Luke might come back.
They left through the back entrance, Jace using his stele to lock up behind them, and made their way out onto the silent street. The moon hung like a locket over the city, casting pearly reflections on the water of the East River. The distant hum of cars going by over the Williamsburg Bridge filled the humid air with a sound like beating wings. Simon said, "Does anyone want to tell me where we're going?"
"To the L train," said Jace calmly.
"You've got to be kidding me," Simon said, blinking.
"Demon slayers take the subway?
It's faster than driving."
"I thought it'd be something cooler, like a van with death to demons painted on the outside, or..."
Jace didn't even bother to interrupt. Clary shot Jace a sideways look. Sometimes when Jocelyn was really angry about something or was in one of her upset moods, she would get what Clary called scary calm. It was a calm that made Clary think of the deceptive, hard sheen of ice just before it cracked under your weight. Jace was scary calm. His face was expressionless, but something burned at the backs of his tawny eyes.
Simon, she said, enough.
Simon shot her a look as if to say, whose side are you on? But Clary ignored him. She was still watching Jace as they turned onto Kent Avenue. The lights of the bridge behind them lit his hair to an unlikely halo. She wondered if it was wrong that she was glad in some way that the men who'd taken her mother were the same men who'd killed Jace's father all those years ago. For now, at least, he'd have to help her find Jocelyn, whether he wanted to or not. For now, at least, he couldn't leave her alone.
You live here?
Simon stood staring up at the old cathedral with its broken-in windows and doors sealed with yellow police tape.
But it's a church.
Jace reached into the neck of his shirt and pulled out a brass key on the end of a chain. It looked like the sort of key one might use to open an old chest in an attic. Clary watched him curiously. He hadn't locked the door behind him when they'd left the Institute before, just let it slam shut.
We find it useful to inhabit hallowed ground.
I get that, but no offense, this place is a dump, Simon said, looking dubiously at the bent iron fence that surrounded the ancient building, the trash piled up beside the steps. Clary let her mind relax. She imagined herself taking one of her mother's turpentine rags and dabbing at the view in front of her, cleaning away the glamour as if it were old paint. There it was, the true vision glowing through the false one like light through dark glass. She saw the soaring spires of the cathedral, the dull gleam of the leaded windows, the brass plate fixed to the stone wall beside the door, the Institute's name etched into it. She held the vision for a moment before letting it go, almost with a sigh. "It's a glamour, Simon," she said. "It doesn't really look like this."
"If this is your idea of glamour, I'm having second thoughts about letting you make me over."
Jace fitted the key into the lock, glancing over his shoulder at Simon.
"I'm not sure you're quite sensible of the honor I'm doing you," he said. "You'll be the first mundane who has ever been inside the Institute. Probably the smell keeps the rest of them away."
"Ignore him," Clary said to Jace and elbowed Simon in the side. "He always says exactly what comes into his head, no filters."
"Filters are for cigarettes and coffee," Simon muttered under his breath as they went inside. "Two things I could use right now, incidentally."
Clary thought longingly of coffee as they made their way up a winding set of stone stairs, each one carved with a glyph. She was beginning to recognize some of them. They tantalized her sight the way half-heard words in a foreign language sometimes tantalized her hearing, as if by just concentrating harder she could force some meaning out of them. Clary and the two boys reached the elevator and rode up in silence. She was still thinking about coffee, big mugs of coffee that were half milk the way her mother would make them in the morning. Sometimes Luke would bring them bags of sweet rolls from the Golden Carriage Bakery in Chinatown. At the thought of Luke, Clary's stomach tightened, her appetite vanishing. The elevator came to a hissing stop, and they were again in the entryway Clary remembered. Jace shrugged off his jacket, threw it over the back of a nearby chair, and whistled through his teeth. In a few seconds, Church appeared, slinking low to the ground, his yellow eyes gleaming in the dusty air.
"Church," Jace said, kneeling down to stroke the calf's gray head. "Where's Alec, Church? Where's Hodge?"
Church arched his back and meowed. Jace crinkled his nose, which Clary might have found cute in other circumstances.
"Are they in the library?"
He stood up, and Church shook himself, trotted a little way down the corridor, and glanced back over his shoulder. Jace followed the cat as if this were the most natural thing in the world, indicating with a wave of his hand that Clary and Simon were to fall in step behind him.
"I don't like cats," Simon said, his shoulder bumping Clary's as they maneuvered the narrow hallway. "It's unlikely," Jace said, "knowing Church, that he likes you either."
They were passing through one of the corridors that were lined with bedrooms. Simon's eyebrows rose.
"How many people live here, exactly?"
"It's an institute," Clary said, "a place where shadow hunters can stay when they're in the city, like a sort of combination safe haven and research facility."
"I thought it was a church."
"It's inside a church."
"Because that's not confusing."
She could hear the nerves under his flippant tone. Instead of shushing him, Clary reached down and took his hand, winding her fingers through his cold ones. His hand was clammy, but he returned the pressure with a grateful squeeze.
"I know it's weird," she said quietly, "but you just have to go along with it. Trust me."
Simon's dark eyes were serious.
"I trust you," he said,
I don't trust him. He cut his glance toward Jace, who was walking a few paces ahead of them, apparently conversing with the cat. Clary wondered what they were talking about. Politics? Opera? The high price of tuna? Well, try, she said. Right now, he's the best chance I'm going to have of finding my mom. A little shudder passed over Simon. This place feels not right to me, he whispered. Clary remembered how she'd felt waking up here this morning, as if everything were both alien and familiar at the same time. For Simon, clearly, there was nothing of that familiarity, only the sense of the strange, the alien, and inimical. You don't have to stay with me, she said, though she'd fought Jace on the train for the right to keep Simon with her, pointing out that after his 3 days of watching Luke, he might well know something that would be useful to them once they had a chance to break it down in detail. Yes, Simon said, I do. And he let go of her hand as they turned through a doorway and found themselves inside a kitchen. It was an enormous kitchen, and unlike the rest of the Institute, it was all modern, with steel counters and glassed-in shelves holding rows of crockery. Next to a red cast-iron stove stood Isabel, a round spoon in her hand, her dark hair pinned up on top of her head. Steam was rising from the pot, and ingredients were strewn everywhere, tomatoes, chopped garlic and onions, strings of dark-looking herbs, grated piles of cheese, some shelled peanuts, a handful of olives, and a whole fish, its eyes staring glassily upward. I'm making soup, Isabel said, waving a spoon at Jace. Are you hungry? She glanced behind him then, her dark gaze taking in Simon as well as Clary. Oh, my God, she said with finality. You brought another Mundy here? Hodge is going to kill you. Simon cleared his throat. I'm Simon, he said. Isabel ignored him. Jace Wayland, she said. Explain yourself. Jace was glaring at the cat. I told you to bring me to Alec, backstabbing Judas. Church rolled onto his back, purring contentedly. Don't blame Church, Isabel said. It's not his fault Hodge is going to kill you. She plunged the spoon back into the pot. Clary wondered what exactly peanut, fish, olive, tomato soup tasted like. I had to bring him, Jace said. Isabel, today I saw two of the men who killed my father. Isabel's shoulders tightened, but when she turned around, she looked more upset than surprised. I don't suppose he's one of them, she asked, pointing her spoon at Simon. To Clary's surprise, Simon said nothing to this. He was too busy staring at Isabel, rapt and open-mouthed. Of course, Clary realized with a sharp stab of annoyance. Isabel was exactly Simon's type. Tall, glamorous, and beautiful. Come to think of it, maybe that was everyone's type. Clary stopped wondering about the peanut fish olive tomato soup and started wondering what would happen if she dumped the contents of the pot on Isabel's head. Of course not, Jace said. Do you think he'd be alive now if he were? Isabel cast an indifferent look at Simon. I suppose not, she said, absently dropping a piece of fish on the floor. Church fell on it ravenously. No wonder he brought us here, said Jace disgustedly. Can't believe you've been stuffing him with fish again. He's looking distinctly podgy. He does not look podgy. Besides, none of the rest of you ever eat anything. I got this recipe from a water sprite at the Chelsea Market. He said it was delicious. If you knew how to cook, maybe I would eat, Jace muttered. Isabel froze, her spoon poised dangerously. What did you say? Jace edged toward the fridge. I said I'm going to look for a snack to eat. That's what I thought you said. Isabel returned her attention to the soup. Simon continued to stare at Isabel. Clary, inexplicably furious, dropped her backpack on the floor and followed Jace to the refrigerator. I can't believe you're eating, she hissed. What should I be doing instead? He inquired with maddening calm. The inside of the fridge was filled with milk cartons whose expiration dates reached back several weeks, and plastic Tupperware containers labeled with masking tape lettered in red ink, Hodges, do not eat.
Wow, he's like a crazy roommate, Clary observed, momentarily diverted.